Enterprise Management 360, your main source for tech news, analysis, podcasts, and videos for the enterprise.
Welcome to the EM360 podcast, where we have a weekly conversation with people who are impacting the enterprise tech landscape. My name is Jonathan Kerr. I'm an advisor at Lionfish Tech Advisors, and I'm a 30-year veteran of the cybersecurity industry, a former Gartner lead analyst, and I provide strategic advice to vendors in the industry. Today, I'm joined by Gareth Lockwood from Sensinet, and we're here to discuss how Sensinet works to secure their clients, going beyond the traditional managed service provider. Gareth, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for that warm welcome, Jonathan. Great to be chatting with you.
Excellent. So let's tear into this. I'm intrigued. What inspired the creation of Sensinet, and what problem were you passionate about solving?
We're passionate and still are passionate, I think is the case. I think our journey started well over a decade ago now, as kind of the company name implies, and it's stuck with us as we've evolved as a company. We basically started out providing internet security to the education sector. So effectively censoring the net for students, right? So making sure that when they were accessing digital content, 10 or so years ago, anything that was inappropriate, we obviously secured. And, as many, or I guess I should say as most schools, multi-academy trusts, even universities to some extent, they've got very modest IT teams. We really set about the problem at an architecture level. So, we wanted to ensure that they don't have to manage these, really complex infrastructure. They don't have to proxy traffic, and hairpin it back to some central server somewhere just to inspect it. And that's really what we did when we launched it, all those years ago. Something that the marketers amongst us have called Direct Protect. And I guess, with that old adage of, empower the users and then get out of their way, that's exactly what we've done.
That's interesting, because you mentioned a couple of things there that strike my technical interest. You mentioned that you've architected this. You've obviously mentioned some of the gotchas that I think others have learned through hard experience. Hairpinning is problematic, as is pulling traffic to central server. So I guess for me, I'd like to sort of dive in a little bit. What capabilities do you possess, and how do you utilize them to serve your customers?
I mean, capabilities is always an interesting question, because when you look under the hood, we don't particularly fit into one of those analyst compartments, right? Like, Secure Service Edge or SASE or one of those. We actually do so much more. And we do that based on the feedback we get from our customers. So we've got about 2,500 organizations, well over 1 million users who, use our products day in, day out. So there's enough of a sample size there that we can get some really detailed insights, how they use our platform. But we're also agile enough that we can speak to them on a regular, a daily basis almost. So, it's about knowing the hows and the whys. And, I think if this were a visual demo that, I was talking to you about, Jonathan, I'd probably walk you through how, one single pane of glass, one single portal will support you on, email security, on obviously web security, because that's our heritage. And then probably the more sophisticated approach that we've taken to cloud application security. I think those would be really the core modules. And then it's really about having this suite of tools, having that more holistic approach to digital risk management, right? So, we've got a rapidly growing number of customers who are asking for things like security awareness training or phishing simulations. And then you've also got the guys at the other end of the scale who are probably more enterprisey, who are asking for things like identity security and data loss prevention. We're probably just scratching the surface there, but effectively we're trying to do a lot of things, but present that in a way that it's, easily digestible. Certainly since the pandemic, and we kind of harp on back about that quite a lot in this industry, but a lot of these digital transformation projects have started to gain traction now, although they may have been rushed a little bit because of what caused that. And you know, we're a team of industry veterans like yourself, right? We've got all the scars to show. We've all experienced those big name brands, you know, the kind of so-called best of breed point products. And I think likewise, we've been through this kind of endless churning of concepts and buzzwords, right? So as we've moved, I don't know, what, a decade or so ago to public cloud, everything as a service, smartphones, you know, today it's probably AI, SASE, SSE, ZTNA, you know, or ZTNA as I'm British, I guess. We kind of have to educate our users to some of that. You know, I'm kind of still waiting for my flying DeLorean that was promised all those years ago. But, you know, unless you've got the time and you've got the ability to carefully research each and every new tech term that comes out, right? You've got to cut through that marketing hype. What is hype? What is marketing? What is reality? Then really, it's our mission to help out, right? I think that's where we are today, right? We've got this single platform that covers the main attack vectors that the security practitioners care about, but we've done it in a way that it really reduces that operational burden. So, you know, it sounds simple, right?
It does. And I think it's interesting what you said about the analyst categorizations. I think that one can be, yes, too rigidly focused sometimes on those different categories. And I think, as you say, the reality of the marketplace, of course, is that there are a variety of solutions. Not all of them fit into some neat solution devised by an analyst one day. And I think it's actually more interesting to talk, as you were just talking there, about who do we serve? So who are these people that you serve? Who are the types of organizations that Sensinet typically targets with its services?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, if I had our sales director on the call here, he'd be saying, well, you know, we're perfect for every size business, every level of maturity. But actually, I do think there is a sweet spot for us, you know, and that's really something that influences both our strategy and our roadmap of kind of innovation. I think it's fair to say that old kind of quote, you know, nobody gets fired for buying the market leader or, you know, best of breed, is probably not as relevant as it once was, especially in, you know, in our industry. We're probably a particularly good fit for those organizations who've got, you know, modest budgets, stretched resources, you know, they're struggling to hire, or they've got a turnover of talent. They want modern tech, but they want tech that doesn't require a team of, you know, 10 SOC analysts or data scientists just to maintain it. You know, I think singular pure play point products are great in theory, but actually what we've seen happening is that you get inundated with notifications, right? You get alerts to the point that, you know, for your average mid-market organization, so we're thinking like 250 to maybe 5,000 users, you've got, you know, a little over 90 seconds to acknowledge an alert, analyze it, make a decision, and action it. And when you feed in, you know, the false positives that will inevitably come with point products, the duplicate alerts that you're going to get, you'll find this notion of alert fatigue, I think it's probably the best way to put it, that kind of sets in and you almost become desensitized to some extent. And that's when things will, you know, inevitably start falling through the gaps. So I think for us, you know, those example industries would be education, you know, as I said before, from our heritage, the public sector, charities, non-profits, and really anyone who cares about regulatory compliance. You know, we've actually gained a large number of NHS trusts over the past year or so because of these growing concerns over, you know, patient data privacy and then all these digitally connected supply chains that they have, but they don't have the resource to effectively do that with 10 or 15 different point products. And from an architectural perspective as well, you know, I think the way we've thought about this is that the platform has been developed not only to serve the end customer, but also partners, right? I think whether you're managing a small business of, say, 50 users all the way up to, you know, 50,000 user multinational, it is simple to buy something like any subscription SaaS product. You can either pay monthly or annually, and, you know, it becomes second nature effectively. So we all try to leverage our MSPs, you know, so we have resellers, we have telcos, and they love to be able to sell this consolidated platform approach. They can white label it, they can then pass on those those costs that come with the platform, and of course then it entails or it enables them to add their own value with their own services. So we do try to keep it to that kind of mid-market, but you know, it is not just the end consumer who really benefits from the platform itself.
That's a great explanation of what you do. So I'm going to try and make your sales director happy now, who says you do everything for everybody, and talk about a problem that I actually think is extremely widespread. Shadow IT. And this is something that we've heard about, and it's something that many companies are taking different approaches to. I've seen companies that try and explore, you know, what cloud services you are connected to, so how cloud native you are, what cloud services they're connected to, people that look at API gateways and try and police those, and so on and so forth. And of course, all these have merit. But from Sensinet's perspective, what do you see as the risks associated with a shadow IT, and how does Sensinet help its customers? What do you do to mitigate potential issues if you discover something unauthorized? And we talk about, you know, unauthorized within a network, but of course in the cloud it can be anywhere. And so what do you do about this shadow IT thing?
Yeah, as you say, it's within or without the network, right? There is no notion of the perimeter anymore, I guess. I think, you know, we look at it slightly more holistically, I guess, and I would categorize, rather than shadow IT, I would look at it probably as insider threat. Whilst that term, I guess, sounds a little bit nefarious, you know, some disgruntled employee or industrial espionage, I guess, would make a good movie probably. I think the reality is most parts of the biggest contributor to data breaches that we hear about in the media anyway are caused by human accident, right? It's, as I said earlier, right, the pandemic has accelerated this.
In my inglorious past, I was actually the lead analyst for insider risk management at a large analyst firm, and I tried very hard to get the phrase good-natured bozos past our editors. The reality is, as you say, is that insiders are everybody. It's not just about what we would think of as the edge case, those edge cases. All they do exist. When I talk to semiconductor firms, when I talk to pharma companies, absolutely have that problem every week, as one of them said to me. But I think the bigger problem is people who are just trying to get their job done. And so back into the question, that is definitely the problem. These people who are trying to get their jobs done and they reach for a tool that may not be on the sanctioned list, and that's where the shadow IT thing comes from. So what does Sensinet do? Because we need to detect that, and then we need to obviously need to assess that risk and then make a decision, or indeed advise your customers to make a decision. So walk me through how that process works.
Yeah, I mean, as you rightly said, right, you know, if you look at the average mid-market business today, they have over 300 SaaS applications in use. Some IT know about, some they may not. You know, what is sanctioned, what isn't? And if we saw the trends from last year, if you look at, you know, the NCSC stats and the other analyst stats, you know, the number of attacks focused purely on SaaS applications tripled in the last 6 months of 23. So the number one capability that you really should be having in place, if not already, you know, pretty quickly, is really visibility, right? So this is something that we have spent years and years fine-tuning. You know, we built our cloud application control on top of web security, because it makes sense. You know, most of the applications that we access day in, day out are through a browser. It's just an evolution. So the way we looked at this was, you know, we have a catalog of applications like many other vendors do, but then we have a team who are solely dedicated to classifying them, categorizing every single action that a user could carry out within that application itself. So we're not just looking at that kind of shared responsibility model, you know, is the vendor compliant with ISO 27001 or SOC 2? It's really about, well, how is that application used? What is the user's intent? And actually, by doing that, you're solving another issue that the CISO comes up against, which you quite rightly touched upon a little while ago, is that notion of friction versus security, right? You know, they always said, you know, the most secure device is not connected to a network anywhere. Well, you know, that's pretty inefficient. So the way we see it is if someone in sales, he's on a commission role, he's selling a widget and he's hindered from doing that because of a control that we in security have put in place. Well, firstly, they're going to complain. But more often than not, as you said, they're going to try and find a workaround. So we have got this exhaustive list of intent-based actions and with that action, an associated risk level. So you don't really have to take that binary block or allow approach. You can, you know, look at, for instance, only the high-risk actions. So if you know that a user tries to upload a database of your customers to a cloud file share somewhere, obviously you want to stop that because it's pretty high risk of data loss. But they may still want to use that tool day in, day out to share or to download content from an agency. So you'll probably still allow them to do that. So having that level of granularity is really key, and it allows you to build that posture without the friction of usability that comes with it.
That's excellent. That's really interesting as well. And I think you touched on something which, again, leads us nicely into our next point. We're all overworked. When I, again, one of my interests is fraud detection and protection. If I talk to an accounting team and I suggest something that puts a little bit more friction in the path of the fraudster, but means they have to do an extra couple of steps, they look at me like I've swallowed a weasel, or you know, they look askance at me. For my American colleagues, I very rarely swallow weasels. That was just a colourful aphorism. The point that we have is that we are all working at peak. And I think that comes to this, as you say, this tension where people go, well, I'm trying to do my job, but the security team aren't letting me. I'm going to find a way around. On the other side, we have people like a CISO, or a couple of CISOs I've known in my career, who say, I can't train my people. They're stupid. And it's just, wow. You know, but what they're actually saying is that these training methods they've tried, and it's great to hear that you're evolving those, are not working. And so people are looking at lots of different technologies, including, of course, AI, as a way of managing this work overload, making the best use of the scarce human resources we have. And part of that, I think, is in this continuum. Where, as you say, you framed it nicely as the insider risk problem. And yeah, we're all insiders. So AI potentially can help us in a number of ways. It can help us discern user intent and interactions. And then when it sees something that is amiss, it can instigate behavioral adjustments, which is essentially what training is. And this is something that, again, I've looked at in some depth. We tend to start off thinking training is about education. It actually isn't. It's about behavior modification. I know this because my dog, who you probably may have heard at the beginning of this podcast, is, you know, he and I are trying out various behavior modifications on each other. And of course, it's still true in the workplace. And we can go further than that. Of course, AI can help us with some prescribed responses for known attack patterns and so on. And even as you say, it can instigate its own response patterns where appropriate. So I guess, again, from Sentinet's perspective, this AI thing that we're all, you know, we're all still learning about, we're all still coming to grips with, how do we, and how does Sentinet use AI not only to respond to threats, but also to predict and prevent future threats, emerging vulnerabilities? And I'd love to hear about how Sentinet's addressing that.
Yeah, wow, that's a big topic. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I think, you know, to your comment about the CISOs who kind of say, well, my users are incompetent, I'm absolutely an advocate for, you know, awareness training in its more sophisticated form, right? I think you've got to educate your users to spot the obvious, but don't rely on them. You know, it's not their day job. They're going to, have other motivations. But I think, obviously, with AI clearly in the spotlight at the moment, whether we're talking, you know, large language models, generative AI, deepfakes, we're at that point where it's effectively commoditizing things like phishing, right? It doesn't really take any talent today to have a tool craft you a really legitimate looking social engineering scam just off a few text prompts, right? And it's really scary to see the rate of which that is becoming more and more advanced. So I guess from my perspective, you've really got to use AI to fight AI, especially in that mid-market sector that we are serving. You know, as I said earlier, they simply do not have the time to research and mitigate something that is accelerating way quicker than most of us can kind of keep pace with. And that's where, from our perspective, it's about using AI, absolutely. But it's also about using it to automate and orchestrate some of the responses. Being that our you know, IT security guys don't have the time to look at that alert and kind of action it. And that's really best applied in an integrated platform, right? You know, as we said earlier, that concept of insider threat, whilst you try to educate your users on best practice and, you know, perhaps you've got some, I don't know, internal usage policies, their primary job is not cybersecurity. So you're effectively just putting your head in the sand if you're attributing any of this to incompetence. So if we look at that in kind of finer detail with our platform, you know, if we can inspect every single email conversation that comes through the platform, whether that be through the MTA architecture or through an API, you know, if you can look at every single web request and response, every interaction with a cloud service, you know, you're effectively taking on board billions and billions of data points every single day and putting that into a huge data lake. So when you can then apply, you know, machine learning algorithms, you know, which we've done for years and years now, you can effectively build up a really, really strong profile of what a user's normal activity is, how they behave, you know, and you can shape your policies based on that behavior, you know, or rather look for the anomalies in that activity, right? So it could be something as simple as, well, let's put an additional factor of authentication. You know, we'll send them an SMS message or an app push notification if suddenly they try and upload a file to Dropbox at 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Right? That's out of the norm. Or let's say, you know, a user's credentials have been compromised, their account's been taken over. So there we're looking for nuances in their language, right? A sudden request for a financial transaction or we know an invoice needs paying urgently in an email, or that old adage of, oh, we need some, you know, Google or some Amazon gift cards buying for someone's, you know, leaving due. We've all seen them, right? That could be then a cause to put it in a quarantine.
That is the trick. I mean, to those CISOs, and, you know, if any of you are listening on the audience, well, first of all, thank you for listening. But second of all, if you are rolling your eyes at these comments, either because perhaps you recognize it in yourselves or you think, well, yes, I've seen that behavior in my workplace from any side, I think that it is very dangerous to just say, oh, that's just incompetence, without actually looking at the trigger factors. Because the fact is, we're all incompetent. We're all incompetent when we are placed in an environment where we don't have sufficient experiential learning, to your point about security awareness training, in order to allow us to make the right decisions and do the right thing. And so, I mean, the question I think that comes out of that, if we are all recognizing this problem, that's why we're all, you know, again, those of you out there in podcast land rolling your eyes, we all recognize this problem. So how can SensiNet help these CISOs who are going, oh, hey, that's just incompetence, that's just lack of knowledge? What does SensiNet do to kind of create and assist the CISOs in what they are trying to do, which is make a safe, productive and secure working environment?
Mm. And again, John, I think, you know, the use cases we've discussed go way beyond that, right? They're far reaching. And really, it's about making sure that you are creating or we are creating and releasing features in effect to be an extension of the CISO's team, right? It's not just AI for the sake of staying relevant. It's about being an integrated part of their team and kind of, you know, helping them out effectively. Of course, you know, there are complicated products out there. It's not just about speeds and feeds, right? You know, or tick box features. You've got to understand how your product is applied in the real world. So, you know, thinking not just about the security itself or protection, it's about the insights or you know, the data you might get from that, whether it's, you know, as I said earlier, to influence policy, whether it's to, you know, audit your users for compliance. So, you know, we've spent a lot of time developing not only the security, but also the reporting and the analytics capabilities, to the point now where, you know, if you just want to create a simple report for your fellow C-suite colleagues and peers, you know, that just talks about your overall risk posture as a business, great. You know, then that will give you that that ammunition that you need to stand up and you know, push your agenda for security within your peers in legal or in HR who probably don't understand security. Or on the flip side of that, you know, if you really want to be down in the weeds with all the dirty details, you know, you can get to a forensic level of analytics within a couple of clicks, really. And of course, you know, that's all great in theory, right? But if it takes you 9 months to deploy this kind of technology and then fine tune it and configure it, you'd argue that that's not compatible, right? That's not efficient. If it's disruptive to your network configuration, you know, who are you to kind of go and champion that? So, you know, that's where we've spent a lot of our efforts. You know, it's not only the technology. So, you know, yes, there are machine learning algorithms in there. There's a ton of AI and analysis and behavioral analytics, but really it's about looking at this at a higher altitude. You know, our quickest deployment in this mid-market is about 2 days end to end. So, you know, as a CISO, when you've got to justify your spending, you know, if you can demonstrate time to value in a matter of weeks as opposed to months, you know, that goes a long way in making us an ally as well. And that's really our vision. You know, we're not a big brand, as you know, many of your listeners have probably never heard of us, but it's about making sure that we're that perfect ally for you.
Well, let's hope they have a lot more people interested in the valuable work you're doing after today. Gareth, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you coming on. Also, thank you to everybody listening. We hope you took a lot away from today's podcast. For further information on what we've talked about, then please head on over to sensornet.com. We'll be back next week with another episode in our podcast series. Until then, make sure you subscribe to this podcast on all major platforms. Follow the conversation on our socials at EM360Tech on Twitter and LinkedIn. And for more great daily content, head on over to em360tech.com.